Hello, this is Sandra Ferguson with the Friday, May 19th, 2017 edition of the News Gazette, and we will begin on the front page with a piece called A Moment in Mahomet. Community pulls together in wake of youth's death. A village grieves by Fred Croner, Mahomet. Jody Murphy was in the Mahomet Seymour High School auditorium on Wednesday night. Her freshman son was presenting a memorial scholarship award to a graduating senior. As John Tyler spoke, his mother scanned the student section. "I saw several check their phones and break down," she said. "I knew the news that was spreading through the crowd was negative." Shortly after, the ceremony was cut short as those assembled learned that a junior on the Bulldogs soccer team, Jacob Hamilton, had died hours earlier in a multi-vehicle chain reaction accident on U.S. 36 in Douglas County. Two other junior soccer players were in the vehicle. Prior to the evening ceremony, Jody Murphy had heard about an accident but didn't know any details. "I didn't share it with JT," she said. "He needed to do what he did without distractions." 16 years and one day earlier, while Jody Murphy was pregnant with John Tyler, an auto semi-accident on Interstate 74 claimed the lives of two Mahomet teenagers, her son Tyler Atkins and Adam Abdel Haq. "It's painful to watch and feel again," Jody Murphy said. "This opens it all back up." As mother and son left the high school on Wednesday, they made the short trip to the high school soccer field, where an impromptu prayer vigil had been arranged. "I was absolutely floored when I pulled around the corner and saw the outreach of the community," Jody Murphy said. "Mahomet is amazing. Complete strangers were showing up. We're blessed we live in Mahomet and have the support we have. Unfortunately, we've had a lot of practice lifting each other up." Mahomet Seymour Superintendent Rick Johnston was among those at the vigil. "To see teachers and students struggle together puts things in perspective," he said. "What builds a community, what lifts it, is the camaraderie, and that's what sets this place apart." The grieving continued Thursday. A group from Chicago transported three comfort dogs to help students get through the day, and the school district announced that services would be provided for as long as needed. Before the Bulldogs baseball team hosted Bloomington in the afternoon, members took a knee and gathered on the mound during a moment of silence. Mr. Hamilton's brother, Bradley, is a starter on the team and a senior, set to graduate tonight with his classmates. The ceremony at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, Urbana, will go on as scheduled, Principal Shannon Cheek said. By late afternoon Thursday, an online Jacob Hamilton Memorial Fund that had been set up on GoFundMe with a photograph of Jacob tending goal in front of a soccer net was filled with messages of support and praise. "With sadness," the page read, "Jacob Hamilton passed away unexpectedly, leaving behind friends and family who adored him and a community that is at a loss for words. On behalf of the Hamilton family and in lieu of flowers, they are requesting a donation to honor his life. All monetary donations will be used to set up a scholarship fund in Jacob's name." The fund's goal was $1,000. By 9 p.m., it was at $4,965. Longtime neighbor Brian Pereiro literally watched the Hamilton brothers, Jacob and Bradley, grow up. "They were always outside playing," Pereiro said. "Their parents did a good job kicking them outside to the yard to play. They didn't get to stay inside and play video games. They were good kids. If they would see you, they would wave. I can't think of better kids or better parents. I think of them like the kids we grew up with." For Pereiro, Wednesday's news brought back the painful memory of losing a classmate shortly after high school graduation from MS in 1986. Mark Davis passed away at the intersection of Prairie View Road and Route 150, Pereira said. He was on his way to class at Parkland College. His accident prompted the traffic lights that went in at the intersection. And next, in a spotlight on grads, Improving Hospice, Her Future Goal by Marcus Jackson, South Bend, Indiana. During her sophomore year at Notre Dame, Petra Rantanen helped take care of her grandmother, who was nearing the end of her life. It was during those months that Rantanen, a 2013 Urbana University High graduate, began to feel strongly that people in this country need better care when they reach that stage. Not long after, she took a class on hospice care. "That made me aware of it as a potential focus for my research," she said. So, as a junior, while studying abroad in the United Kingdom, Rantanen served an internship at Hospice UK, a charity in London that represents all of the country's hospices. "I was able to see specifically where we could improve and how important it is to improve hospice care," she said. From the personal experience she had with her grandmother to the professional experience in Europe, Rantanen, who will graduate from Notre Dame this weekend with degrees in sociology and pre-health studies, was inspired to write her senior thesis on hospice care. She interviewed 17 physicians in the UK who specialize in hospice care, which further inspired her to continue on her pre-med path at Notre Dame. "One of my biggest findings was how people's attitudes shift when they get to hospice. A lot of times people have negative attitudes when they go to a hospice. They think that's where you go to die. They think the main physician is abandoning them and all these really dark things," she said. "Once they get to a hospice and they experience the care, the hospice philosophy in the UK is they don't want to leave when it's time to be discharged." Rantanen's plan is to attend medical school in the future and specialize in hospice care. "There is a huge demand for it," she said. "The whole holistic nature of hospice care, it's not just looking at someone's lungs or their kidney or at their heart. It's looking at the whole person and their family and their social environment." Before she resumes her studies, Rantanen wants to work a year or two in service. She'll soon start as a house parent for Casa de Esperanza, a safe space for children in crisis due to the neglect and effects of HIV in Houston. She has spent a good chunk of her time at Notre Dame preparing for a future in medicine, but that's not even Rantanen's favorite thing to do at school. She's also a member of Notre Dame's orchestra as a cellist. "I've been playing the cello for 11 or 12 years now," said the co-president of Notre Dame's orchestra. Rantanen has also participated in opera in addition to being a part of the school's celebration choir. "I'm a terrible singer, but I've met a lot of close friends through that," she said. "Oh, and she's in Red Cross Club, which puts on events like blood drives and distributes fire alarms to folks around South Bend. We do stuff with veterans, too. It's a lot of fun," she said. "All these things I have been a part of have been a huge part of my experience here." None of it comes as a surprise to the folks who knew her in uni, where Rantanen was every bit as active as she is now. She was not only the first chair cellist and not only good as a musician, but encouraging others to play and do well, said Rick Murphy, a music instructor at uni. "She also was the head of our music club, and she sponsored a lot of recitals and events and occasionally went on trips. She was super bright, dedicated, and also a nice young lady. We get spoiled with people like that here, but you never get tired of teaching students like Petra." And next, from the Sanitary District Board, official calls for pay cut, and she hopes new member will second it, by Tom Kasich, Urbana. One of the three members of the Urbana and Champaign Sanitary District Board is hoping to cut her pay. Sanitary District trustees are paid $6,000 a year, a sum that Urbana Democrat Jennifer Putman said in a memo to county board members earlier this year is grossly misaligned with compensation paid to other public entity trustees, commissioners, and directors in the county. Putman, a former Champaign County board member, told members of the county board Thursday night that she'll urge a newly appointed sanitary district trustee, the Reverend Liddell Merrick of Champaign, to support a pay cut. Perhaps I will be more successful in persuading the newest trustee that we should keep our compensation more in line with what is paid to the citizens who direct the other boards and commissions in Champaign County, Putman told County Board Democrats in a meeting before the regular board meeting. Illinois law allows sanitary district trustees to be paid up to $6,000 annually. Putman said she attempted to cut sanitary district compensation to $3,000 a year for the president of the board and $2,400 a year for the other two members at a March 2016 meeting. But her motion died for lack of a second from either board member Jerry Like or board president Diana Lennick, who is being replaced by Merrick. In a memo to sanitary district board members last year, Putman noted that members of most similar governing boards, the Forest Preserve District, Housing Authority, Mental Health and Nursing Home boards, are unpaid. Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District board members receive $50 per day, not to exceed $200 a month. It's also more than what county board members are paid, she said. We are compensated so much better, so much more generously than members of the county board, Putman said of the sanitary district trustees. And then when you look at the Saints, who run for school board with no compensation at all, you start to realize that compensation across the board for reelected and appointed officials in our state is out of whack. People don't realize how high the compensation is, Putman told the Democratic caucus. It's legal. It's also legal for us to reduce it. And I'm going to give Reverend Merrick a chance to see what it's all about, serving on the Sanitary District Board. I think it's unfair to ask him to make a decision about what his compensation should be until he sees what the energy and time demands are. And we'll turn to the opinions page now and begin with an editorial called A Special Counsel. Donald Trump's impulsive and ill-conceived conduct is turning aspects of his nascent presidency into a circus the country doesn't need. President Trump's chaotic tenure produced another stunner Wednesday. This time, it was the appointment of a special counsel whose job will be to investigate Russia's attempts to influence the 2016 election and what role, if any, Trump campaign associates may have played in it. Suffice it to say, the thin-skinned Trump is not happy with the decision. In more of his unfortunate tweets, Trump called the investigation the single greatest witch hunt of a politician in American history, and said of himself that no politician has been treated worse or more unfairly. Self-pity is never attractive, and that's especially true when presidents engage in it. But few things upset Trump more than the suggestion that he needed the Russians' help to defeat Democrat Hillary Clinton. When the subject is raised, he has neither the capacity nor the inclination to take assertions like that in stride. The question now is, what's next? The only correct answer is, who knows? The FBI, under now-fired James Comey's leadership, already was looking into the Russia matter. That investigation will continue under Comey's successor. But the FBI now will answer to Robert Mueller in his capacity as special counsel. But what suspected crime, who did what when, is the FBI looking into? Comey declined to share any details with congressional oversight committees. At the same time, former Obama administration national security officials have testified before Congress that they found no evidence that whatever Russia did or tried to do had any effect on the outcome of the election. Further, California's Democratic U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein has stated that she has seen no evidence improperly linking the Trump campaign with the Russians. Perhaps that's why Assistant Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who appointed Mueller, said his decision is not a finding that any crimes have been committed or that any prosecution is warranted. That's usually not the case in matters of this nature. The Watergate investigation began with a burglary of the Democratic National Committee and expanded from there. The Iran-Contra probe was set in motion by disclosures that White House officials had improperly provided funding to guerrillas trying to unseat the communist dictator of Nicaragua. The investigation leading to the impeachment of President Bill Clinton regarding Monica Lewinsky started with an investigation into the shady Whitewater real estate investment involving Clinton associates. Throughout the entire history of independent counsel probes, there always have been special allegations that provoked investigation. Even if critics, as some have done, allege that former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn had improper contact with the Russians, that came well after the election. Given those facts, it seems clear that Rosenstein took the action he did to reassure the public that any investigation would be above board. That, in itself, is not a bad thing. But special counsels who enjoy unlimited time and resources have a history of running off the rails. That's why a bipartisan Congress opted not to renew the independent counsel law that vexed politicians of both parties over the years. The Reaganites fumed while Iran-Contra special counsel Lawrence Walsh consumed many years and many millions of dollars in his endless probe, but no more than Clintonites who raged of independent counsel Kenneth Starr during his probe of Lewinsky et al. What also is clear is that the opposition party loves to sit back and cheer on a special counsel probe of the party in power. Republicans cheered on Starr. Democrats cheered on Walsh. So now Democrats will cheer on Mueller, who will be conducting what appears to be an open-ended investigation in search of whatever he can find. The only discipline that will be imposed on this investigation is the disciplines that Mueller imposes on himself. So the good news for Trump, if there is any, is that Mueller is a widely respected figure who can be expected to be an impartial fact finder. The bad news for Trump is that he appears to be emotionally unwilling to let matters play out while he pursues his legislative and administrative agenda. And now we'll turn to the From Our Readers section and begin with a piece written by Karen Harvey of Monticello, called Monticello Results Not in the Paper. Congratulations to the Monticello High School girls track team for winning their sectional track meet held in Mattoon. Neither WCIA nor the News Gazette even mentioned that track sectional. Unfortunately, this is not unusual. Monticello sports gets limited or no coverage on a regular basis. It would be nice to hear and read about the great athletes from Champaign-Urbana, as well as all of the surrounding area schools, not just Unity and St. Joseph Ogden. Good luck to all state track qualifiers. Be proud of your accomplishments and have fun. And again, that was written by Karen Harvey of Monticello. The next piece is written by Kim Clifford Premel of Champaign, and it's called Limit Gambling and Its Social Costs. For those who might have missed it, there was an interesting Champaign Council study session May 9th regarding video gaming in Champaign. While much of the presentation focused on the possible benefits of the video gaming industry, I appreciated Councilmember Greg Stock's clarification regarding the profits realized by gaming establishments in Champaign in 2016. He pointed out that the $14 million gained by these businesses was money lost by the patrons, money that went into the machines and didn't come back out. Later, he went on to illustrate gaming's addictive nature, referring to the gaming experience as, you click, and you just keep clicking, and then suddenly your paycheck was gone. Councilmember Alicia Beck later made reference to the social cost of gambling, stating, it's negligent to say that there isn't a social cost, when indeed it has been documented. Curious as to some way to quantify that cost monetarily, I located a study that did just that. In The Hidden Social Costs of Gambling, Grinnell's Baylor University, 2011, that cost is clearly defined in a summary paragraph stating, the social costs of gambling are hidden only to the extent they are often misunderstood or overlooked. Empirical studies report that the impact on society of one additional pathological gambler is about $9,393 per year. With that information in hand, I would encourage our community and City Council to do whatever is within our ability to restrict legalized gambling. And that was written again by Kim Clifford Premel of Champaign. The next from our reader's piece is written by Eric Britus from Champaign, and it's called Challenges Raising an Autistic Child. If you're the parent of an autistic child, you may wonder how different your parenting experience has been from that of other parents. I was diagnosed with autism in the fourth grade, but most autistic children these days are diagnosed sometime before entering school. Remembering my own childhood, I think the first thing to prepare for is a much more intense why phase than that of neurotypical, that is, not autistic, children. Get some Bill Nye and Magic School Bus DVDs from the library. These will help a lot. Autistic children tend to be very prickly, very picky eaters as well. On the subject of tantrums, which all children have, yes, your autistic child will have them, and they won't be pretty. Of course, name one child, autistic or not, that ever had a pretty tantrum. Often, it won't even be about whatever they seem to be crying about, so you're stuck doing some serious detective work figuring it out. I feel the need to say that your child is not a burden or trapped in a shell, despite what some people, like those oh-so-nice folks from Autism Speaks, might say. They tend to talk about autism as a disease to be cured, and only rarely give autistic people an opportunity to speak for themselves. Ironic, considering the organization's name. Treatments for autism are either the garbage peddled by Autism Speaks, or realizing and accepting that your child is going to be weird. Just make sure it's a weird that works. Again, that's written by Eric Britus of Champaign. And the last from our reader's piece is written by Kevin Collins of Ogden. Firing is really all about Trump. Let me get this straight. The FBI director was fired because he was criticized for not doing his job well, being too flamboyant, a showboat, grandstanding, and worried more about his public appearance by a flamboyant, showboating, grandstanding, always worrying about his public appearance reality star turned president who is being criticized for not doing his job well. No need to say more. Again, that was written by Kevin Collins of Ogden. And in the business section, CHI Overhead Doors, Workers Get First Dividend by Ben Zigterman, Arthur. About 700 employees at CHI Overhead Doors were surprised Thursday with dividends from stock in their own company. after private equity firm Kohlberg Kravis Roberts & Company bought CHI in 2015, employees were granted stock options, and 2 years later, KKR is issuing its first dividends. "It made me feel really good to get it," said Larry Beals, who delivers doors for CHI. "It gives me more pride in what I'm doing." CHI Overhead Doors, which makes garage doors, has been owned by four different private equity firms, and KKR is the first with an employee ownership model, said Pete Stavros, its head of industrial. "It was owned by private equity firm after private equity firm, where typically there were 5 to 10 people who owned company stock," Stavros said. "Now it's 1,000 or so, so it's a big departure." With employee ownership programs, the goal is to get people more bought into the mission of the company, Stavros said. "This is supposed to help employees feel more invested in the company, helping it improve. It has helped CHI improve the efficiency of the routes its truck drivers take," Stavros said. "We have truck drivers who are paid by the mile, so they don't really care about efficiency of routes until you make them owners and talk to them about what their stake in the outcome could be worth," he said. It also improved how it sources steel for its doors. Because its steel providers are paid by the pound, they were intentionally producing steel at the high end of CHI's acceptable thickness range. After catching this, they tightened the range, saving $3 million a year. "People started asking a lot more questions," Stavros said. He said employee ownership works, but more importantly, it's a core value for KKR. "It's anecdotal. There's academic studies that have shown different levels of performance and engagement," he said. "We don't spend time trying to collect data on that. We believe it at a gut level." CHI Overhead Doors CEO Dave Bangert said the program helps align employees with the company's goals. "It helps us invest in our people, and it helps us create alignments throughout the organization in terms of the goals we have," he said. "There's an awareness of the program and the alignment it brings, and there's an interest in how we can continue to take better care of and better serve our customers and help the business." Bangert didn't say how much employees received in dividends Thursday, as it varied. "I don't think it's about the amount," he said. "I think it's about the fact that we're able to share in terms of alignment, that we're able to share and reinvest in the people." And in the history section, in area history, in 1917, 30 mailbags full of blank forms were sent out to sheriffs and mayors in Illinois to be used in the selective draft registration on June 5th. Illinois troops would be mobilized on July 25th. In 1967, the steering committee for a $250,000 bond issue in Rantoul announced campaign plans. Teams would go door to door to build support for the bond issue, with the purpose of buying and developing 140 acres north of the community to be developed into a park and golf course. And we'll take a short break now and then return with the second half hour of the Friday, May 19th, 2017 edition of the News Gazette. I'm Sandra Ferguson. Please stay tuned.